Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Are you interested in learning about how you can determine the best chance of effectiveness for when to intervene during a session? In my upcoming courses in March, I consider the implications of the studies I'm about to present in this episode and more, and then I share some strategies for observing eye contact between you and your patient during session in order to determine when is the best time to deliver interventions for your patient's success. If you'd like to learn more about this, you can find information and links on connectiontherapypodcast.com. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Together, ethology, psychology, and neuroscience appear to be converging on transspecies models of brain and behavior. This is a quote from Dr. Gay Bradshaw and Dr. Alan Shore in an article they co-wrote in 2007. The way I imagine the visual of this quote is the field of mental health is expanding, and its borders are reaching the borders of our neighboring fields of neuroscience, which is the study of the nervous system, including the brain and spinal cord, and the field of ethology, which is the study of animals. And while this sounds great, the complication in the nearly 20 years since this was written remains, how does the well-meaning mental health clinician exactly do that? How do we converge on a trans-species model of brain and behavior? For that matter, there are so many ways in our own field to understand mental health. Some different parts of the field of mental health conceptualize treatment differently, even within that one field. So you might be thinking to yourself now as a practitioner, I already need to know about how I practice, and it behooves me to understand how some of my colleagues work. And then there are these other fields now that I feel compelled to understand, because as I discussed in the most recent episode, number 30, there is an undeniable link between mental and physical health. And furthermore, the ways we share nervous system and brain mechanisms with animals also makes me curious how that impacts mental health. So as a responsible and ethical mental health clinician whose responsibility it is to take all this information in order to provide the best care for patients, you might be thinking, I'm already struggling to find ways to stay on top of my already overflowing amount of responsibility. How would I learn about all these additional things and their application to my practice? Well, I have one solution for you, which is here on the Connection Therapy Podcast, we seek to make the translation of the research into your practice as straightforward as possible. Now, we also seek to continue the exploration with you of how our field is connecting with these other fields. And I'll share that, as I understand it at least, how that works in these episodes. And hopefully we'll have some guests on to give their experiences too. Today we're going to consider a particular phenomenon called heart rate variability. The reason we're going to study heart rate variability is that it spans all three of these areas. Neuroscience, because it is a phenomenon that was found by studying nervous systems. And ethology, because as fellow mammals, our animal counterparts also have heart rate variability. So learning about its importance has applications for our field of psychology. Your action then is to stay connected with us and open to this new information in order to explore how you might apply it to your practice. I'm going to be reviewing these concepts for the month of March, including research articles and other things as the episodes go forth. And as you know, I provide specific courses in helping you develop your techniques with a balance of the science and art of therapy. As always, everyone is welcome, and I'm glad you're here. Let's begin. This is Dr. Brenda Moreau, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you information about heart rate variability and a little bit about biofeedback. With our episodes dedicated to these concepts this month, including research and other applications, you will find ways to improve your practice of mental health. But in case even that sounds overwhelming, I will let you know that even just turning your attention to this phenomena is one of those things that once you see it, you will notice it everywhere. And this additional noticing of your patient's behaviors in session will influence your sessions in positive ways. Okay, first, before I define heart rate variability, let's first ensure we are in agreement about its importance. That is, why would we even want to know about this new concept? Heart rate variability is showing an association with physical health in a number of ways. And those include the existence of chronic coronary heart disease, diabetic neuropathy, hypertension, and fibromyalgia, among others. Heart rate variability also displays an association with mental health, including things like people with symptoms of anxiety and panic disorder display low heart rate variability, and people with symptoms of depression also display low heart rate variability. And people with experiences of trauma display low heart rate variability. So you might be thinking to yourself, okay, yeah, as a mental health clinician, perhaps it's time to start understanding more about heart rate variability. Dr. Ina Hazan explains that, quote, heart rate variability oscillations are a reflection of the interaction between sympathetic and parasympathetic branches of the autonomic nervous system. So I think about it this way. As humans, we are always moderating between the need for activation, which accelerates our heart rate, and the need then to bring our heart rates back down. And this back and forth rhythm is influenced heavily by our breathing and by our body's ability to regulate blood pressure. So the timeout here is like, wow, you know, thanks, body. You're doing a lot to keep me going here. Didn't realize there were that many factors in the day-to-day and even moment-to-moment, or for that matter, breath-to-breath experience of keeping my internal system regulated. And heart rate variability is one measurement of that. It's not just the heart rate. That's just sort of a simple understanding of the beat-to-beat. But this is actually the way the heart rate varies between the beats. And we will see some more distinctions of that when we start talking about research on this concept. But right now, we'll just leave it with how impressive it is that our systems know how not only to keep the heart beating, but how to keep it fluctuating between the need to activate and accelerate and the need to calm down, and how this back and forth rhythm is reflective of so many things and associated with mental and physical health concerns when it is out of balance. For some background here, let's remember the discussion of Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory. It was actually Dr. Porges' interest in studying heart rate variability in newborns when he noticed that the vagus nerve was both a marker of resilience and a risk factor. This is from a book by his colleague, Deb Dana, who did a tremendous amount of work taking Porges' theory and helping clinicians understand how to apply it therapeutically. Again, we'll cite her book in the show notes. And I should comment here for a minute about the idea of proxies. Proxies is like a word for approximation. And proxies are useful when we cannot directly measure our variable of interest. In this case, Porges could not directly identify resilience in newborns, so he found a marker of it. And the confounding problem there is the vagus nerve, also can be a sign of risk. I'll say more about that in a second. So in heart rate variability, we have a proxy measure for some these really complex variables that seem to have associations with mental and physical health conditions. And Dr. Hazan summarized Porges by explaining, quote, "The human autonomic nervous system has evolved with three distinct circuits: immobilization, mobilization, and social communication and engagement." I'll say those again. Immobilization, like shutting down, not moving, not interacting at all. Mobilization, it's like that flight, fight response. And social communication or engagement, which is interacting with others and one's environment. So as a responsible mental health clinician, you hear study citations like the ones I mentioned above. And the question becomes, okay, I have some patients who have histories of trauma. And now I'm curious how to help them increase their heart rate variability, since low heart rate variability is usually correlated with the detrimental physical and mental health concerns. As mental health clinicians, we want to start assessing for which of these responses from the nervous system our patient is operating in at the moment, because the first way to help a variable or a condition is to learn how to assess for it, right? So we're going to do that all in the month of March, and we'll discuss ways that biofeedback and other indicators of heart rate variability can take a place in your sessions. But right now, let's just think about the moment-to-moment view of that, because there are ways that through that brain-face-heart circuit that Porges talked about and that I mentioned earlier in episodes 2, 7, 9, 10, and 16. There are ways that the expressions on one's face, including specifically eye contact and other things, can also tell us in the moment of our sessions how someone is functioning and from which of those places in their nervous system responses they are operating from, that immobilization, activation, and social engagement. In a straightforward way, we can consider that if someone is operating from their immobilization part of their nervous system, they're going to be shut down. There will be very little eye contact, very little interaction at all. Depending on age, you can see patients look as though they are dissociating. Sometimes children actually slump and are kind of on the floor, bent over. So this is a really concerning situation and needs to be addressed because, you know, it's so severe that we need to make sure there's not a physical health experience also happening. So that's the immobilization part. The activation part is that fight flight response. You may have had experiences with children fleeing from session or attempting to run away from session. In adults, a lot of times this doesn't look like actual running out of the room, but it could be another evasion of sorts. For example, showing up late to session or forgetting session and not showing at all include ways that people can flight, especially as adults. The fight, of course, hopefully we haven't experienced too many of those times, but it can be a verbal or physical confrontation in session. And so these are ways in which our insight-oriented interventions are not going to be effective. And we want to start looking for subtle indicators of someone's nervous system, indications that this is where they're operating from at the moment, and help bring them to a more social engagement functioning, that third state that Porges hypothesized as being possible to operate from. And that is the one in which we can intervene with any insight-oriented interventions, and our general mental health interventions are most effective when someone is operating from a social engagement area of their nervous system. And so how does this relate to heart rate variability? Well, again, we're going to have to look at proxies here. And heart rate variability is a proxy for what Porges calls vagal tone. And Aside from being a really cool phrase, what in the world, you may ask, is vagal tone? Well, from a mental health clinician standpoint, I think of it as someone's ability to calm themselves during trauma or stress. Essentially, our nervous system is always scanning for the question of whether it needs to activate and be ready to that fight or flight status, or if it can relax in the environment and be with the company within their environment. Now, sometimes it's really appropriate to activate the fight flight mechanism. So this is not to say they are always a problem. But what is important is the ability to use all of the functions. That is to say, to be able to activate when the environment requires it and also be able to calm down when the environment is safe to do so. And the heart rate variability seems to be a reflection that the stronger it is, the more the person has the ability to operate in both of these ways. So that's their ability to moderate between these different states. And so we want to see that increase. And one way to look at that is then we want to give them more opportunities in our mental health sessions to practice and encourage that social engagement system to come online in increasing ways. Many of our patients, especially ones with whom I have specialized in working, have experienced traumas, and so they are really skilled at activating that sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight one. And that part is overdeveloped to the point that calming down and calming the nervous system, that parasympathetic side, has a hard time getting its counterpart to relax. And so the person's body and by extension their mental state is kind of stuck in the activated mode. And there is an entire area of mental health focused solely on applying these concepts and learning ways to measure this phenomena, and it involves biofeedback measurements. Right now, I want to let you know about what's coming in the next episode and why I think this is so important. So there's research that I'm going to share with you in the upcoming episodes the rest of March that talk about how we are learning about heart rate variability through biofeedback. So again, we're kind of jumping down the proxy line here, right? So we want to learn how to help someone increase their heart rate variability because it's a proxy for their ability to shift states as they need to between their nervous systems and ensure that the more fluid their ability is to move between their nervous system activations depending on their environment, the better overall mental health and physical health outcomes they are likely to have. As an introduction to the episode that is going to follow this one, I will share the way I started learning about biofeedback lately, and that was through my interest in equine-assisted services. So much about the polyvagal social cues and other ways that brain-face-heart circuit come to life in both humans and horses is fascinating to me, and I wanted to learn more about it, so I started understanding more about biofeedback because that's one way to measure heart rate variability that is related to these ideas from Stephen Porges and overall physiology of both humans and horses. And I figured learning about biofeedback could assist me in understanding this relationship so that I could better understand the research that I'm doing in this area. And I also thought about the horse as being able to provide biofeedback indicators, and for that matter, other humans. These states of nervous system activation will be felt across all the beings in an interaction. So when you're working equine-assisted services, any body who's participating in that, a horse body, a human body, all of the mammals that are in that interaction will sense when each other's nervous systems are activated. So my sense is that because many patients who've experienced chronic trauma, that is to say continuous trauma, have a significant capability to mask their facial features, I am hoping that the faces of the horses and other body movements from the horses will display some of what's happening in these nervous system activations. So my interest in learning about how equine-assisted therapy could be diagnostic is what led me to understand more about biofeedback. And then the next episode, I'm going to share some biofeedback research including studies about heart rate variability in humans and horses. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.